Hey everyone, welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm Jason Berlindy, the editor of the Fretboard Journal magazine, as well as the host of this podcast and the new Truth About Vintage Amps podcast with Skip Simmons, which I encourage you all to check out. And as always, that is John Rauhouse playing in the background. If over the years you have become infatuated and enamored with the music of Django Reinhardt and perhaps have learned to play the music of Django, you're in for a treat today because we are going to be helping you discover a musician who may or may not be on your radar, Oscar Alamon. I first found out about Oscar Alamon when Acoustic Disc, David Grisman's label, put out an anthology about 20 years ago, and I was completely floored. Here was a guy who not only played with Django for a little bit, played a Selmer just like Django, but was bringing his own South American influences into the world of gypsy jazz music and doing a very cool spin on the tried and true world of Django-style music. Oscar Alamon's life story is incredibly fascinating. He played with Josephine Baker. There's a Nazi story involved. There's all sorts of wildness. Somebody should do a screenplay about this guy's life. But except for a bunch of anthologies, there hasn't been a lot done with actually his music or notation until now. Today's podcast is with Seattle area musician Greg Ruby, who just unveiled a 100-plus page book of notation and tab on the music of Oscar Alamon. It is a monumental undertaking. I got it in the mail, and I was immediately floored and wanted to reach out to him to get him on this podcast. So that's what you are about to hear. Greg and I talking not only about Oscar's background, but also the making of this book. I've played with this book. I've brought my guitar out. I've done a couple of the simpler solos. They are so much fun. There are also MP3s folks can download so you can feel like you're playing in a full ensemble, even if you are not. It is a very, very cool book. You can get it at gregrubymusic.com. I will also include that link in the show notes for this podcast. In other news around these parts, Fretboard Journal 44 is about to come back from our printer in about a week. So if you have not subscribed to it yet, I encourage you to do so. You can do that at fretboardjournal.com. And just for listening to this podcast, you can use the coupon code PODCAST and take $5 off of your order. Everything we do around here in our small office, the podcasts, the videos, the online content, all trickles down from that print magazine. So by showing your support for that, you're really helping us out in a lot of different endeavors. If you want to help us out in an even bigger way, we have the new Fretboard Journal Insider Program, which you can read about at fretboardjournal.com/insider. And that is a way to basically buy me dinner once a month and help us out so that we can grow even further. We have some big plans for 2019 and beyond. And thanks to the support of folks like yourself, we're going to be able to do all this stuff. So it's pretty exciting around here. In other news, The Fretboard Journal crew will be at the Laconer Guitar Festival, which is quickly coming up. That's May 11th and 12th up in Laconer, Washington, one of the great Pacific Northwest towns. It is a tiny little hamlet on the side of a canal, as beautiful as it gets. They have a tulip festival up there every year, and that just ended, I believe. And it's taken over by guitarists one weekend of the month, Mother's Day weekend. So May 11th and 12th, the Laconer Guitar Festival. We will be up there up with a few dozen of the best luthiers from around the country who will be showing off their wares. We're also going to be at the Vancouver International Guitar Festival, which is June 29th and 30th up in Vancouver, British Columbia. A similar event, more electric guitars, some more pedals, some more stuff. A little more eclectic up there, but we're going to be up there as well. So come say hi to me if you are at either of those shows. Without further ado, here is my talk with Greg Ruby. We're talking all about the music of Oscar Alamon. And I do have a correction. During this podcast, I told Greg that I didn't think Oscar's best music was on Spotify. I don't know what I was thinking. I did not record this on 420, I swear. But most of Oscar's music is on Spotify, including the Acoustic Disc anthology. So there you go. I made a mistake, and I'm sorry about that. Go dive, if you're into Spotify, go dive into his music right now. You will love it. And then go pick up this book from Greg Ruby. All right, that's my spiel. Here's my chat with Greg. I hope you enjoy it.
So you grew up here?
I grew up in western Pennsylvania, south of Pittsburgh.
All right.
Yeah, Uniontown. Although technically south of Uniontown, which would be Hopwood. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, western slope of the Appalachians.
And is that when you got the music bug?
back there?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. From age four on. Are we rolling?
Yeah,
is this
sure.
Part of it? Okay, all right, yeah. Yeah. From age four on, you know, my dad listened to a lot of like 50s jazz records of like Coltrane and Miles and all those great folks. And my mom listened to show tunes and would sing and tap dance around the house. And I think somewhere between the two, and the Beatles cartoons of my youth, mm-hmm. I wanted to play guitar. I think from about age four on, played piano a long time.
Yeah.
And then eventually switched to guitar.
Okay.
So, yeah. And then I had, you know, the normal wayward youth of playing guitar in bands with friends and kind of just mucking around. And,
yeah.
Yeah. And then eventually got the, you know, the Django and Hot Club Jazz bug. Friend of the family gave me a Borelli Legrin record, and I was just like, oh my god,
that was the introduction. What? Not a Django record.
The original one was actually a Borelli record, and I was just like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
But it sort of happened, that one, and then also I had been listening to a lot of the Grisman recordings, and also here in Hot Dog with Stefan Grappelli with the David Grisman Quintet was like, who is this fiddle player? And sort of the two of those happened around the same time, and then it was like, I went to the library. There was no internet, and found a Django and Stefan cassette tape, and just like devoured it. And then it took a while for me to actually like muster up the courage to think that I could actually play the music. It was sort of just this like otherworldly sound. And I started in like kind of late 90s digging into it. And really that was when I kind of started this trek into Hot Club Jazz and heard, it was right around the same time that the acoustic disc, series of Oscar came out, the swing guitar masterpieces. So I kind of heard Oscar and Django stuff. Like I kind of arrived at the starting point of my journey in playing this music. And those two were just like sort of the first feeding of musical information. And so I always kind of kept them on the sort of like equal standing as well. So
that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, that acoustic disc was my introduction to Oscar Alemán too. And I, you know, never even dared venture trying to play that stuff, but you did. And I'm grateful for that. I'm trying to think late 90s, like, could you buy it were they making cheap gypsy jazz guitars yet?
Or no.
So what was your, what'd you end up doing?
Great. So what I did first was I traded a beat-up Volkswagen van down at the pawn shop for a refinished L48 Archtop because it was the closest thing I could get to a jazz guitar. I know, ironically, my
van life screwed everything up for you. Yeah.
I know. Oh, I should have kept the van. But anyway, I got the guitar. And so that's what I played for a long time.
Yeah.
A year or so later is when I moved to Seattle.
Okay.
And I, through someone in town, Craig Harris had one of the sagas that was made in the 1980s.
Yeah.
It was one of the Django the Selmer copy guitar. So I ended up buying that from him and then started a band, Hot Club Sandwich, that I played with for many years. And then, you know, kind of slowly kept that trajectory.
So
going.
you were clearly playing at a pretty high level when you did decide to dive into the Django music and the Oscar Alemán music.
I was playing, I'd taken a handful of jazz lessons, and I had growing up, my cousin had been an L.A. Rock guitar player.
Okay.
So he gave me lessons and kind of in a very kind of like it wasn't a very structured thing, but he imbued a lot of the spirit, enthusiasm, and also some solid technique that kept me, that kept me engaged and interested through my teen years. And then, I just kept up with it. And I'd say I was about 22 when all the hot club bug kind of set in.
So the world of gypsy jazz and Django Reinhardt inspired music has completely blown up in the last 20 years.
Crazy.
There are books. You can buy a cheapish guitar to emulate that style. But Oscar Alemán, who we're talking about, like, there was that acoustic disc thing, but there's been nothing about him really, right?
What I found fascinating, maybe, like I mentioned earlier, from the beginning, Django and Oscar were sort of like equal figures in my in my mind of musical inspiration. And as the sort of Django following just continued to grow, I was always surprised that such little attention was being given to Oscar. And especially as like tutorial books were coming out, it was like, hey, wait a second, this guy, like, he was Josephine Baker's band leader. He played with all the expatriates. He was, he recorded with Sven Asmussen in Europe in the 30s. He basically almost single-handedly took swing music and hot club music to Argentina when he had to flee during World War II.
Yeah.
Made all these incredible recordings. And there was just no musical information as far as like a structured book on his music.
You gave us a nice little summary. I was going to ask for folks who don't know who Oscar Alemán is to give the synopsis of his life. You just gave one. Fascinating. I mean, it should be. Yeah. There have been movies about Django. There should be a movie about this guy.
Well, I can do a quick little.
Yeah, go for it.
And I'm guessing in all this, you're snipping and taking
nonsense. No
pieces.
Editing here.
Ah!
Go for it.
All right. Cool. great. That works for me too. So Oscar was born in Argentina.
Yeah.
And was orphaned at a very young age. I believe he was 7 or 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He was, basically living on the streets, and there was a ukulele maker who, actually, I believe it was either a cavaquinho or a ukulele maker that he had. He was saving his money to buy this instrument so that he could play it, and the ukulele builder had died, and in his will he said to give this instrument that he had built to Oscar. So here was this orphan kid with a ukulele, and played in all the taverns and played all the time, and he made a living on the streets. There was a guitarist, Gaston Lobo, who heard Oscar play and invited him to join a Hawaiian guitar duo, and they traveled, I believe, to Brazil, where they made a series of recordings. And it was there that there was a knockoff of the Blackbird Review called the Bluebird Review.
Okay.
It was run by Harry Fleming, who was an American entertainer and tap dancer.
Okay.
And this was traveling throughout South America and Europe. And he hired Oscar playing... they were doing the Hawaiian guitar duo to join this troupe. This was the early 20s. And also on that same group was a trumpet player, Tommy Ladnier, a famous New Orleans-style trumpet player who taught Oscar a lot of the early like approaches to jazz and kind of imbuing him with the spirit of New Orleans jazz and swing and all the, well, it would have been New Orleans jazz at that point in time, but like introduced it to him. So by the time Oscar arrived in Europe and the Bluebird Review became a financial disaster, he was stranded in Spain and in Madrid, where, Josephine Baker's scouts had heard him play jazz guitar and invited him to Paris in the early 30s to be there and to play guitar and lead her band, where he proceeded to do so For his entire career there, at one point he was actually invited to join the Duke Ellington Orchestra in 1933 as a lead guitar player in the group. So they would have had Fred Guy on rhythm guitar, yeah. and Oscar, but Josephine Baker wouldn't let Oscar out of his contract, telling Duke, if you can find me a guitar player who can dance, sing, speak seven languages, lead yeah. my band, and is a good companion, I'll let him go. To which, apparently Josephine won the argument, and Oscar stayed. He stayed in Paris up until World War II, making a series of recordings also with a lot of the French accordionists, as I mentioned earlier, yeah. Sven Asmussen. And then at the outbreak of World War II, he had to flee back to Argentina. At the border, his national guitars were stolen. He played a national tricone, was mm-hmm. taken by the Nazis for the war effort. And he ended up back in Buenos Aires, basically penniless, with his Selmer guitar and a trunk full of clothes, and single-handedly rebuilt his own career in Buenos Aires, becoming one of the stars of the nightlife of Argentina.
What a ride!
Yeah, what a crazy. Yeah, can you imagine?
And he lived a lot longer than Django. When did he pass away?
I believe it was 1980.
Okay.
It was.
But the recordings, there weren't later recordings, were there?
Well, this is interesting. Most of the recordings on the acoustic on the acoustic disc, Swing Guitar Masterpieces, I think go up through the 50s.
Okay.
Kind of focusing on more, I want to say, of like that hot club yeah. sound. But he recorded up through the 70s. There's a wonderful album, Alemán 72, that was a pretty significant record in Argentina. Hmm. But recently, since I've put out the book, I've made a lot of contact with a lot of the
fanatics.
The Oscar, the Alemaniacs down in all around the world. And yeah. One of them has been sending me a complete discography, and he's okay. been sending me MP3s from his personal 78 collection, mm-hmm. radio shows, and just all these incredible recordings that I had never had the opportunity to hear before. So it's pretty
had the music
exciting.
Had his, because I guess, you know, one question a lot of us have daydreamed about is like, yeah. what would Django actually have done if he played longer? Because like, you know, some of the gypsy jazz guys have gone into synthy stuff. And where did Oscar Alemán's music in the 70s, was it still the same stuff?
He was still playing primarily swing
yeah.
and jazz music. He also had a series of recordings that were very much Brazilian and very yeah. rooted in Brazilian rhythms and almost like choro-like in its approach, but with the guitar playing yeah. a lot of the melodies. In fact, on one of the recordings that I'd never heard was a version of Carinhoso with Oscar playing the melody on. And it is gorgeous.
Wow.
Like just beautiful lyrically and very, very true to like a Brazilian approach to the music, in mm-hmm. the same way that when he's playing swing, it's very true to the distinction between that kind of rhythmic language. It was like he was very aware of the subtleties and that bilingual kind of sense where he could speak one very fluently and
yeah.
the other very fluently, then kind of where they crisscross. But yeah, and then there's a few recordings, you know, where it almost starts to feel like maybe a little bit like rock and roll, but that
okay.
could just simply be his sidemen.
and just to make, I was serious, like this would make for a great movie, just to make it even more ready for Hollywood.
Yeah.
He actually knew and maybe played with Django himself, right?
Right. So throughout the Paris years for Oscar, he was both like there were several occasions where like Django would decide there'd be an engagement Django would decide that maybe that was a better day to go fishing, or just something else preoccupied his imagination, and that took precedent, where the band would be scrambling. We have an engagement, and sometimes they would go and find Oscar to fill in, and sometimes there's one incident that the intro in the book has on the biography of Oscar, and where he had Django broke all his strings, or like two or three strings during a set, and didn't have any strings with him, and Oscar was there and gave Django some strings, and then later that night Oscar was out at dinner and he went to pay the bill, and the person said, "Oh no, Django's already paid your bill for the night, sir." So they had this kind of, I think they were both, they had a lot of mutual appreciation for each other. And also, of course, they were both kind of the premier guitarists on the Parisian jazz scene. And it's said that, that Oscar used to go back with Django to his caravan and to the camp, which he brought very few non-gypsy musicians back with him, but made the exception for Oscar, and they would just go and jam and play, and that would be the place to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah, no recordings is it?
No recordings.
Nobody had brought a Zoom recorder to that caravan.
No. We can only imagine. Sometimes the imagination can.
And as a very accomplished gypsy jazz player, stylistically. You kind of talked a little bit about this, but like, where is Oscar Alemán versus Django? Like, where, what's the technique difference? Stylistically, where are they different?
Right. Well, I think that the first thing I would say is just in their own approach and language has a lot of Oscar feels very much like, you know, there's a certain bounciness to his playing.
Yeah.
He swings the rhythm really hard, like there's just like and he'll like spend a lot of time just, you know, kind of working one note with this deep sense of swing in it, and has, I think, much more like an American horn player type approach to his playing, whereas Django feels like very much an amalgam of you know, the inspiration of Louis Armstrong and all the hot jazz, but very much with his background and technique, playing a lot of the, you know, the very kind of longer lines, very like, you know, very fiery and passionate, and just kind of like that different nuance. But
yeah.
Alemán also tended to very much craft each song in a very detailed arrangement for recording, and I think functioned did a lot of work as a sideman as well as a band leader, and I think that kind of influences it. Technique wise, Django used a plectrum.
Yep, thick one.
And Alemán used a thumb pick and his fingers. So most of the single note things were done using the thumb pick.
Mm-hmm.
And then on a lot of his solo guitar pieces, he used the thumb pick, and you can hear the fingers as well.
Yeah.
To kind of get a lot of the sort of moving bass lines while there's these other ornamented type of arpeggio type. Yeah. It's beautiful stuff. So for the book, what I tried to do was really focus on the pieces that he was doing single note, soloing. So in a sim, just so that it could translate between whether using a regular thumb pick. You don't need a thumb pick. Yes, you do not need a thumb pick. In fact, all the recordings that I did along with this, I used just a regular old plectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's called Oscar Alemán Play Along Songbook Volume 1. You've already put yourself on the hook for Volume 2.
Yes.
How many years did this take you to do? Because I listen to these songs and I wouldn't even know where to begin. So.
Oh my goodness. So I almost, I would say I started it naively Probably 15 years ago when I was doing transcriptions of my own interest of Oscars music. And I found that, you know, transcribing Django, transcribing Oscar, transcribing, you know, all the great players that I love is such an immediate way to bring that into my own vocabulary. And I started building up, you know, a collection of these over a couple years. And at one point I, thought, gosh, you know, I should start putting these together for a book. But you get these ideas and then like you set out on that journey and and you're like, wow, this
at least eight people want this, right?
And just the amount of work that it really takes to you know, make a transcription for oneself and then get it into finale, into the detail, to make sure everything is correct, and then to provide the play-along recordings to go with it. So it's a rhythm section of rhythm guitar and upright bass, myself playing rhythm guitar, Matt Weiner playing bass, and then I went in and I added all the melodies that Oscar played, the beginning and end of each song, with several choruses, maybe four or five choruses of just bass and guitar, so you can practice along. That's like making a full-length record to accompany this. So that took a while. And then and originally it was going to be published through Django Books, but it just started to make a lot more sense that I do it myself. So I did a Kickstarter and was graciously funded by 140 supporters to do that. It exceeded my goal. And I thought, well, geez, we exceeded the goal. I want to give back and give a little more. So then I decided to transcribe all the corresponding guitar solos that were within each of these songs. It ended up being the book exactly that I wanted to the kind of book that I would want to buy.
Yeah.
And also Michael Dregney did author of a bunch of Django books, and he did the biography of Alamán. And then I contacted Jose Iacona in Buenos Aires, who did a full biography book of Oscar that is only published in Argentina. And he provided me with a treasure trove of photos, and many that I'd never seen before that are interspersed throughout the book. And he even included his father had taken guitar lessons from Oscar in the 70s. And he sent me some diagrams of some arpeggios and scales that Oscar had handwritten for his for this guy's dad. And so it just like each piece, it just kept kind of getting more and more exciting.
Yeah. Is Alamán in Argentina like viewed as a music hero, or is it like how he is in the States where it's kind of those in the know only know about him?
I have heard both.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think it depends which generation.
Sure.
So I've met, you know, when I'm out playing, I've met people from Argentina who would be like, have you heard of a guitar player, Oscar Alamán? And I'm like, yes, I love that guy. We'll play some in the next set for you. And they're like, wow, we didn't know that anybody, you know, he was a huge star, you know, during, you know, my parents' days or when I was a kid. And, you know, and there is a, since the book's come out, I've also been in touch with Oscar's granddaughter, actually kind of prior to that, just kind of making sure everything was cool with them. And so I know she's a jazz singer as well.
Oh,
and there's
cool.
like a whole, there's a number of groups down there that play in, you know, and as an homage to Oscar. And she actually gave an invitation for me to come down and play with them and present the book. So I'm that's my now I just have
just
to
sell some books to
sell
pay for
some books and get the plane down there. No kidding. And then I'll be able to come back and answer that question more thoroughly.
That's true. It's
of
a
what the
scene mission.
Is down there. Absolutely.
There must be maybe not. He lived fairly late. Is there video footage of him?
Oh yeah, there's quite a bit of video footage. of him. The ones that I've seen are actually from movies of him with his band playing and dancing, and he's an incredible dancer as well as he is guitar player in some of the footage. So you can find it on YouTube.
Yeah. Are his dance moves your next book?
You wouldn't want to see me dance even on a podcast.
Whatever happened to his Selmer? I mean, it's like a very unique, very pick guarded Selmer.
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Right. So there was in that particular one, so he took his one Selmer back. And it's interesting when you look at the pictures over the years.
Yeah.
Like in the pictures of him in the 40s, it looks just like your standard D-hole Selmer. And then you'll see that has the extended fingerboard. And then like in the early 50s, you'll notice that the fingerboard extension isn't there anymore. Mm-hmm. And then you'll notice like all these little elements changed. And I guess at one point he had a top replaced by I think it's Sergio Ripiso. It was the luthier who put a new top on that had, instead of a D-hole shape, it was like a oval type shape sound hole.
That's the same guitar.
And it's the same guitar, and they altered it. And then Sergio Ripiso also started making that style of guitar in Argentina, which I look all the time, but I've never seen one. I've never seen one for sale. I've never heard one. But I am curious. But I believe Oscar's guitar itself is in a museum in Buenos Aires, which I hope to go check out when I go down there. Looks like I'm going down there now.
Yeah, I think you should. Yeah. Figure out the weather timing, but yeah. Some of these solos look pretty damn hard.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there one in particular where you're just like, how the heck did he do that?
The one that I am still intimidated to tackle are his solo pieces, because I think that's where he's using the thumb and the fingers. All the other solo pieces, what I find more challenging than the notes is internalizing a lot of the rhythmic, his rhythmic approaches there. Cause at first listen, you're like, yeah, oh, that's so cool. I can get, and then as you dig in, it's just the subtlety and like, you know, sometimes where he's starting the phrases and what beat it's on it's more challenging to play than I ever expect it to be. And and some of the fingerings are definitely, you know, unlike Django only had use of his first and second finger. And so subsequently a lot of, you know, a lot of the lines are, you know, just kind of work out in that style with his fashion. But Oscar with all four fingers will do these like crazy, just like four finger pull off type things that then like bend down and then like go into like a lot of lower neighbor chord tones but the whole time it's just imbued with this like this bouncy swing.
It's
the
wild.
Whole time. So much fun. And some are a little more I know some are definitely a little more accessible. The one thing that I, you know, at first when I was editing the book thought was a mistake was there was like six beats of rest in one of his solos, which was like, you rarely find that any Django solo.
Yeah.
Like, oh, like that sense of time, like anticipation. And then it's this great follow-up line.
You don't need to be an expert player to enjoy this book, though.
Lots of stuff to digest in there, and even a lot of the out choruses that he would do on songs like say Sweet Georgia Brown. He wrote a riff chorus for the ending of it, so for the final time through the song, and they're just these great little like hip like kind of syncopated riff choruses that he would do with usually with guitar and violin, and it's the same one that he'd do in multiple recordings of these tunes, and they just kind of have like they get to a certain essence, and they're not impossible to play. And I think that's one interesting thing about Oscar as well, is how he really used the rhythm and the relationship between that and the chord tones and connecting the chord, and just these like hip little, like, you know, they're right at the fingertips. You can totally dig in. In fact, when we're done here, we'll have to dig into one.
All right. So what do you ever play show? I should know this. Do you play shows just doing Alemán's music?
Great, yeah. Does great anybody? Question. I do. I have a 6-piece group that I work with. It's harder to employ a 6-piece group than a trio these days, but
sure.
Without saying, and it has numerous folks playing in it. But usually I do it with lead guitar. I have a custom tricone national Resophonic
specifically to play.
Yeah, sound well, like years him. Yeah. Years ago, I was telling Don Young about this project, and he just thought it was the greatest idea. He's like, you have to get that book done. I wish he was still around to get him a copy of it. But he was like, that's great. I'm like, you know, I'd love to, like, I'm thinking for some of these tracks, it would be cool to have a, you know, a resonator. He's like, oh, let me, you know, so he sent me up one that he was like, I think this is the right guitar for you, but let me know. And I found it. It sounded great, but I had some adjustments done to the neck. I got a slightly longer scale, less of a taper, and kind of made it more of like a, you know, single note, you know, rather than like a kind of, it has a little more ease to its playing than for a lot of those things. And I put a much lighter gauge. I actually did a silk and bronze string on it, which gave it just a little lighter of a tension, but still enough to get those cones going.
Okay.
And so I play that guitar. It's lead guitar, violin, and then a reed player, either and usually someone who doubles between clarinet and tenor saxophone.
Okay.
And then rhythm guitar, bass, and drums. And I kind of like to model that group off the 1938 sessions that he did with Sven Asmussen of Limehouse Blues and Sweet Sue. And just because I think that instrumentation kind of offers lot of versatility and can cover most of his repertoire. But then also when I do, you know, trio shows or quartet shows, I'll definitely include a number of his pieces throughout the time. But
that's awesome.
but the 6-piece group is it really kind of captures that. And I do some shows here in town. I take that group to swing dances as well.
Okay.
The Balboa dancers particularly like the kind of up-tempoed hot club jazz approach to it. So I've played at Lindy Focus in Asheville, North Carolina, one of the Balboa events in Denver, a bunch here in Seattle. And so I plan to make a record with that instrumentation at some point in the next year.
All right. How can folks get this book?
The best place to get this book is gregrubymusic.com.
All right.
Yeah. And I'll put it in an envelope and ship it to you wherever you are in the world.
It looks fantastic. I know it's a total labor of love, and no one's getting rich off of Oscar Alemán tablature.
No, but it's a joy. And it's so exciting to see the response that I'm getting from musicians around the world, and just people who are craving to dig into his music. And I really hope that it just brings a little more awareness to him as an artist, but also just to get people out there, you know, playing his arrangements and tunes and kind of giving another listen.
Yeah, he might be the last artist. I know this because I checked where if you go to Spotify, like, it's kind of not his most interesting, I didn't think, recordings. Because the acoustic disc stuff isn't on there, because I don't think Grisman puts any of that stuff on Spotify. So if you just based it off Spotify, you wouldn't get any sense of his genius, you know. You have to dig deeper, everybody. Sorry, but
yeah.
Go on YouTube, apparently.
Right,
there's
YouTube.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's fascinating. I didn't realize. I actually boycott Spotify. Am
there
I allowed
go.
To say that?
Yeah.
I don't have a. I have my stuff on there because it's just happens.
Yeah.
And there it is. But I never use it. I never go on there to listen or just because I would rather, you know, find other ways to listen
for
to
sure.
music. I hope I'm not.
They're not sponsoring
slowly,
this podcast.
Slowly hanging myself here with that.
They'll remember that remark from the Fretboard Journal podcast when you need them
you.
Most.
Yeah. Yeah. But but it's true. There's a lot of great recordings. I love his recordings throughout, throughout the 40s and into the early, the stuff that he did with his groups once he got back to Argentina.
Yeah.
But also those two sessions that so when he went to Copenhagen to record with Sven.
Mm-hmm.
There is an ensemble. They did two sides, Limehouse Blues and Sweet Sue. And those two, in fact, they're the first two songs on the Swing Guitar Masterpieces on acoustic disc. They are hands down some of the finest pre-war ensemble string jazz that you can. I can't stop listening to those two tracks. Yeah.
But he never went back to Europe after the war, did he?
No, he didn't.
Wow.
No. No.
Crazy.
Yeah. Stayed in Buenos Aires.
All right. Thanks for coming out here, Greg.
Hey, thank you. Yeah. Great time. We'll be right back.